You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Jace Tanner is a filmmaker and activist. He is one of the organizers working to purchase and send a Canadian boat to Gaza in an effort to break the Israeli siege. He had been planning to go to Gaza himself last month to meet with another filmmaker there. The plan was to cross Egypt by road and then enter through the Rafah border crossing. Jace planned to travel with others, all part of a Code Pink delegation. When first planning the visit to Gaza, little did they know that beneath the surface of seeming dictatorial stability in Egypt, a popular rebellion was brewing. But before Jace arrived at London Airport, Jace and the world were well aware that a people's rebellion was barreling bravely full steam ahead. To tell the story and describe his firsthand experiences in Tahrir Square, Jace has joined me in the studio. Welcome to Red Eye, Jace.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me here.
January 29th, you were on a flight taking off from London, England, to go to Cairo. The flight departed, but then something unexpected happened.
Well, we were about halfway through the flight, and the pilot suddenly came over the intercom and said that we were being diverted to Athens. A little while later, we landed there. It took us some time before we were given accommodations. We went through security. We were went through passport control. And, you know, in my mind at the time, I thought, oh, I guess the Cairo airport is closed. Following morning, we get back on the plane. Shortly into the flight, pilot comes on the intercom again and says, the reason we were diverted was because there was a bomb scare for that flight. What struck me about it, and this didn't quite sink in right away, but my reaction upon hearing that was essentially, I didn't have a reaction because something didn't quite feel right. And when I thought about it, I realized, okay, we landed. There was no anxiety to get us off the plane. There were no emergency vehicles in sight. And although we did have our carry-on baggage inspected and we did go through passport control, there seemed to be no extra measures around us having been on this flight. Oh, and by the way, the nature or how this bomb threat was passed on to the airline was apparently a note was found in the washroom of the airplane. So something just didn't quite seem right. And the best that I can speculate, and I don't know if this is it, was that it seems that there was some kind of perhaps face-saving thing going on, that it was Egypt Air. Perhaps the Egyptian government just didn't want to acknowledge that it wasn't safe to land at the airport or that the airport was closed. I can't truly explain it.
It was a mystery. Did you encounter any other obstacle? Your intent was to go to Gaza, among other places, to going to Gaza?
At the airport itself, no. It was pretty standard, you know, get your visa and go through the door. You know, by the time I arrived at my hotel, which was about 100 yards away from Tahrir Square, we were informed by one of the delegation's organizers that our permission to enter Gaza had already been revoked.
So you decided nonetheless to go ahead and try and get there?
We decided that we would, the following day, we left for Rafah. It's a fairly long journey, and we didn't get to the border until about 7 or 8 o'clock at night. We had heard various reports of fighting in the Sinai, that the Bedouin had taken control of the roads, that it was potentially dangerous, etc. We encountered no such thing. What we did encounter once we were in Rafah itself, we were in two separate taxis, and the other one was somewhat ahead of us. So our driver, I guess you could say he was driving a little bit erratically to try and catch up. And at one point, we heard a car beeping behind us, and I, in the moment, thought, well, someone's just kind of giving us a hard time for the way in which we're driving. A moment later, this car pulled up to us, and although he did not point his gun at us, he clearly showed it that he had one. So we pulled over. We put two and two together. This man was undercover police. And he said, the border is closed. You can't go there. Okay, well, we gave him the slip. And 15 minutes later, we were at the border. The military was there. They treated us well. They said, if you want to camp out here the night, that's entirely up to you. Within about maybe 10 minutes or so of having been there, two people showed up claiming to be journalists from the Wall Street Journal. Now, I was immediately, the Wall Street Journal? What are they doing here? To make a long story short, my guess is that they were either CIA or Mossad who had been tipped off by this undercover policeman. And along with a few other things, the primary reason why I thought that was that one of them asked if he could take photographs. He proceeded to take photographs. There was very little light, and he didn't use a flash. Now, even though our faces, I'm sure, could be made out, it's not the quality of photograph that I could ever see being used in a newspaper.
You were a group of people who were going, you said, in two taxis. When you couldn't get in, did you all decide to come back to Tahrir Square?
There were 11 of us at that point. 8 of us decided to go back the following day. 3 people remained. And after another day waiting at the border, they realized that it was hopeless. And so they returned, or tried to return, I should say. Actually, they tried to return to the Cairo airport. And somewhere en route, I believe it was in Cairo itself, they were stopped. They were arrested, handcuffed, blindfolded, and spent a rather frightening experience incarcerated until they were finally released and went home.
So people in your delegation had had experience with what the Egyptian police are like, and showed themselves to be even more vicious in relation to the demonstrators later.
Well, yes. And on that note, one of our party, this was a couple of days after we had been back in Cairo, he was newly kidnapped. He was forced into a car. And the way in which he managed to save himself was he had the American, he was American, he had the American embassy on his speed dial. He called them, he put it on speakerphone, and I guess somebody realized what was happening and decided to let him go.
Just one thing before we leave the Gaza part. There's a small town, Al Arish, on the road to Gaza. Did you hear of or notice any part of that popular rebellion which was filling the streets of larger cities like Alexandria and, of course, Cairo?
I didn't witness it myself, but while we were in Al Arish, we did make contact with a human rights activist there who told us that there would be a demonstration that day. And at first we thought we'd partake in it, but then we realized that we wanted to go back to Cairo.
So you're staying in a hotel which is very, very close, within 100 yards of the central Tahrir Square. I've heard when I was watching Al Jazeera, people being interviewed, and one comment that came up more than once was life in Tahrir Square is different from the way Egypt's been. It's a world unto itself. I was wondering how your general impression of this square was as somebody arriving from Canada.
Well, it was remarkable. And what I would add to what you've just said is that we had a couple of people say to us, this is the way Egypt used to be before the dictatorship. And what they were talking about was people treating each other with respect, people truly looking out for each other. As Westerners, we were welcomed. And while people did make a point of saying, yes, we are angry at Western governments for their support of this dictatorship as well as others. We recognize that you are the people of those countries, and we want to, you are our guests. We will look after you. We will make sure you are safe. They were just so gracious.
You did a number of interviews, and they're posted on Rabo. And one of the things that struck me when I listened to a couple of the women who you had interviewed, there was a line, one woman, I believe her name was Nada, and she said, not only have we changed the regime, we've changed ourselves. And she said further, I hated what we were before. I love what we are now in Tahrir. And you could see a kind of, what would I say, joyousness, I guess, on her face as she was recounting the sense of self-transformation that was characterizing Egypt.
There were many people who said similar types of things to us, and even for those who we couldn't communicate with because we didn't speak Arabic, and although a lot of Egyptians, of course, do speak English, not all do, just that sense of joy and determination and realizing that this had to be. People said to us how it's now or never. We have to do this. And Nada, of whom you speak, one of the things that she also said the day that we interviewed her, the previous night, as with other nights, there had been some snipers in a hotel and also on a bridge that was directly across from the square. People were killed, sniper shots through the head. She talked about how people felt ready to die, if that's what it took.
Yes, it was. It was amazing to me watching your video, the calmness and matter-of-factness of which she said that. And she said that they had. There is apparently an Islamic prayer that people say when they feel they're facing a situation of death possibility, and that she and others had said. But it was all like, not bravado, but with a calmness.
Yeah.
It was quite striking. In terms of the interviews they were done, you were with Code Pink, which is a feminist organization. Men are part of it, but it's a feminist motivated. And the interviews, were they all with women in the square that you did?
Well, for the most part, and everything that I've posted so far has been we're all women. At this point, I'm working on another short video, which will not feature any one man in particular, but for the most part, it will be a multitude of voices, mostly male.
One of the questions that came up in the videoing, it seemed there was a search with the women who were being interviewed. Do you feel uncomfortable here? Have you experienced harassment? You've slept out here in the square. This is very unusual. What responses did you get to that question?
Well, a number of women said that there was no sexual harassment at all in the square. They felt that the men there were taking care of the women as if they were family.
Hmm. The exuberance was something that, so there was a woman you interviewed, Hannah, I think.
Hannah, yes.
And she just seemed, she recorded that she worked in media and she'd made up slogans.
Yes.
And she was making one up on the spot and so on, and she was so thrilled with this engagement.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that we talked about amongst ourselves was how, it was so clear that when people have not been allowed to speak freely for 30 years, the need to express what's in their hearts and minds is just so strong. And at times it practically became difficult for us to do what we were trying to do because everyone wanted to talk to us. I mean, it was a wonderful difficulty to have, but
yeah, I noticed while you were talking, somebody would bring a slogan they'd written in Arabic, and they just were so cheerful and proud at having it, and they'd wave it in front of the camera, so it got got seen. Is there any other experience there in the square that particularly affected you?
Well, you know, when we first came back to Cairo, at that point, the army was in position and they were essentially keeping the peace. I guess about a day or so later, the army pulled out. And at that point, the pro-Mubarak supporters, most of whom I would imagine were undercover police, they started infiltrating, and that's the point in time where the violence started. There was an afternoon, well, maybe 2 or 3 hours, where myself and a few others, were trapped in an internet cafe. There was a rock-throwing fight going on outside. At that same time, we had one of our delegation on a top-floor balcony of our hotel, and he was able to see a lot of what was going on the street. He could look all the way up to Tahrir Square, and the protesters had put up barricades. Some of the protesters had come outside to defend the barricades. They were having rocks thrown at them. The only response that they gave was to try and protect themselves with blankets. Now, directly across from our fellow delegate, there was another hotel. There were maybe a half a dozen people on that roof with cell phones, clearly directing the action, trying to support, trying to give communication to the Mubarak people.
Hmm. You came back, you left Cairo on the 4th of February. That was before Mubarak resigned. You come back to Canada, home, but you come back from that place. What sense of the situation in Canada do you have with the experience of having been in Tahrir Square?
Well, first I need to say it was very hard to leave. It was just hard to leave. Coming back to Canada, and, you know, I've been talking about this pretty much nonstop and working on the videos. And, you know, I think the thing that I would like to say is how I think as Canadians we need to look at the Canadian government's position in all of this. And Mr. Harper never quite came out and said that Mubarak needs to go. Even while Mubarak was still in power, he was saying, oh, the transition is taking place. Well, the transition needed to happen right then and there, and fortunately it did. But to the best of my knowledge, since Mubarak has actually stepped down, Mr. Harper has been silent. Perhaps there's something I've missed, but I don't think so. And I think that as Canadians, we need to look at our government's position in terms of foreign affairs. Why is it supporting governments that are oppressive? And I think we need to take it even closer to home and look at Harper government policies and how they affect Canadians. 2 prorogations of parliament. Now we've got the Bevoda affair. We've got the G20 mass arrest, the biggest one in Canadian history. And to me, there's all a connection. So as well as I think progressive Canadians want to support Egypt and other countries around the world, we also very much need to look at what's happening here.
Well, thanks very much, Jace.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking with Jace Tanner. He's a filmmaker, an activist, and he's one of the organizers of the campaign to raise funds to send a Canadian boat to Gaza. Find the details at CanadaBoatGaza.org. Go to the events page.